Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. As I mentioned earlier, three of the women who have accused Donald Trump of sexual misconduct with them are supposed to hold a news conference at 10:30. We'll see if that happens. We'll see if we have a good feed to it. If it does, we will take it, as there is this attempt now, considering the Me Too movement, everything that's happened since the Harvey Weinstein article, to raise the profile of things that have been swept under the rug, and certainly including this, and even more so after the resignation of Al Franken last week on charges that are considered less serious than what the president is accused of doing. So if that happens, if we have good audio, we will bring it to you. In the meantime, we will look at some politics closer to home and talk about the latest from Times Square. Of course, this morning's explosion, which was, according to the mayor and the police commissioner, a terrorist incident. Joining me now are Christina Greer, Associate Professor of Political Science at Fordham University and author of the book Black Ethnics, Race, Immigration, and the Pursuit of the American Dream, and Ben Max, Executive Editor of the Gotham Gazette. Hi, Christina. Hi, Ben.
Hi, good morning.
First, Ben, anything to say? I know you're not out there reporting the facts, but we had this explosion of a pipe bomb at Times Square. The last number I saw was four people injured. And we see the mayor and the police commissioner saying the perpetrator, alleged perpetrator who's in custody, did have a pipe bomb and it went off prematurely.
Yeah, I mean, I think a few things that go through my mind in instances like this are, one, you know, it seems like New York City and everyone else who has a stake in any of this, which is most of us across the country and even the world, are sometimes getting a little bit lucky here with how these perpetrators go about trying to enact this terror. It doesn't seem like this individual got the results that he was going for, and we're all lucky for that. One of the other things that goes through my mind certainly is looking at the coordination among the MTA, the NYPD, the state police, the governor, the mayor. And, you know, it's really terrible in New York that we're always faced with these questions of how well are they all going to coordinate, because we know some of the personalities involved. It looks like on issues like this that they coordinate fairly well. But it's, you know, it always brings to mind those troubles that are not great to have to think about in moments like this.
And Christina, it's weird that in New York, of all places, home of the World Trade Center, we came to feel, I think, a little bit immune from this as other incidents were taking place around the country. And now suddenly in the last few months, we have the bike path truck attack. Mm-hmm. And now we have this, which could have been a lot worse. One of the officials, it might be the mayor, I'll look this back up, is characterizing it as an attempted terror attack. Well, the bomb did go off and some people were injured.
Right.
But here we are, and right in Times Square.
Right. And I think, you know, when the mayor was campaigning, he kept saying that, you know, we're the safest big city in America, which in many ways is true. And that's, you know, sort of local crime and stats that many people look at. But I think part of that analysis is also because some of these domestic or the terrorist events have not been successful, as Ben has said. You know, there have been people who have passed away and who have been injured, but we aren't seeing, you know, hundreds or, you know, numbers like, say, Las Vegas, where that was a domestic terrorism event, but, you know, 60 people dying and 600 injured. These are, you know, numbers that are oftentimes under 10 or under 15. So in a city of 9 million, it doesn't really resonate. And unfortunately, so many New Yorkers are becoming, in some ways, immune to the threat. I mean, because we have to get on the subway every day, we have to move about the city, and we do know that it's many people. Some are suffering from severe emotional and mental challenges, and they want to hurt other New Yorkers. But if we thought about that every day, I don't think anyone would either come to the city or ever leave their apartments in the city as well.
Christina, the big news about the subway right now is supposed to be that the subways are still not working very well.
Right.
There is this plan that's being implemented by the MTA chief, Joe Loda, that I think we hoped would fix things up a little bit faster than is actually happening. And we also have the report last week from the Regional Plan Association that says it's going to take not the $800 million that Cuomo and de Blasio are arguing over who pays what share of it to get things fixed, but $40 billion mm-hmm. over the next 15 years or so to really modernize the subways. Are they going to take this seriously as Cuomo runs for re-election and as de Blasio already has had his?
I really hope it becomes a real issue for anyone who's running for election office, especially for the governor, since he controls the lion's share of the funding. We know that the MTA is hemorrhaging money. They're so inefficient with how they spend money. We know that, yes, we have one of the oldest subway systems in the country. However, we can look to so many other cities, domestically and internationally, to get some of those ideas. It is embarrassing how much we ask people to pay for what they actually receive. And we see that, you know, it's an ineffective system. So, for example, you know, I was at LaGuardia yesterday watching tourists trying to figure out a Metro card to then put in the special machine where they get the ticket and then get on a bus that, you know, they waited 30 minutes for. I mean, this is one of those things where it's not user-friendly either for New Yorkers or anyone who's visiting the system. I really do think that we have to make this a priority in the 2018 elections. We know that there's so many great advocacy groups that are out there really pushing for change and pushing for a better effective use of our money, of our taxpayer money. But also, you know, $275 is really oppressive for a lot of working class families in New York.
Ben, assuming Governor Cuomo is going to run for re-election in 2018, how much of an issue do you think this is? How much of an issue is anything? Or does he presumably coast to re-election unless something new comes up?
It's going to be a significant issue in the 2018 gubernatorial election. There's no doubt about that. I think one of the biggest questions for the governor is how much of an issue it is in the primary. It's definitely going to be an issue in the general election, no matter who he faces on the Republican side. In the primary, it's all going to depend on who exactly runs to Cuomo's left. But it's going to be an issue because he has neglected it to a certain extent for so long. Now, he's recognized that. He took some actions earlier this year, and he's promising a congestion pricing plan for January, just a few weeks away, when he unveils his State of the State address on January 3rd. We're going to be looking for that, and it might even come out a little bit sooner than that. So he's definitely moving ahead because he's very careful about covering his bases when he has political risk.
And that's early, January 3rd, for the State of the State address. You think he's purposely, you know, he's making a decision, I'm going to come right out of the box here right after New Year's and set the agenda on my terms?
There might be a little bit of that at play. I actually haven't been involved in conversations about the planning. Just, you know, they put that out recently. One of the things that the governor decided to do was last year he toured the state giving, I believe it was 6 different regional State of the State addresses. He scrapped that. Now for this coming year, he's going to go back to Albany, give the one address. He'll have to follow that up with his budget presentation. This is a very, very important moment for the governor, and how he approaches congestion pricing will certainly have an effect in New York City. And there's no question that New York City is his political base, and he needs to shore that up in 2018.
I thought that the January 3rd date was to steal some of the thunder from the mayor's inauguration on January 1st and shorten his media cycle. But also, I mean, keep in mind, 2018 is the official beginning of Andrew Cuomo's reelection bid. And the vast majority of his votes come from downstate. And there are many New Yorkers who are incredibly unhappy, partially because of transportation. You know, he's been relatively on the right side of history when it comes to, you know, marriage equity, pro-choice, somewhat on guns. I mean, he's usually late to the party, but when he shows up, he's a big D Democrat. But there are many issues where New York City Democrats feel like he's a little moderate and definitely not a progressive and definitely not a leader. So if he does not secure his downstate base, then he's got a really rough time, especially in a primary, but definitely in a general as well.
Go ahead, Ben.
I'll just say briefly, I'm working on a piece about the governor's challengers in the Democratic side and the potential ones. And in talking with a variety of rumored candidates or people exploring a bid, one of the first things they say, and they're not even from New York City necessarily, Terry Gibson, a former state senator from a little bit outside New York, Stephanie Miner, the mayor of Syracuse, who's leaving office. One of the first things they say is he's vulnerable on the MTA.
So do you expect there to be some kind of serious challenge to him in the primary? I mean, he was embarrassed in 2014 by Zephyr Teachout. your colleague, I guess.
My colleague. That's right. Fordham University.
She's a law professor who ran to his left, kind of on the, you know, the Bernie Sanders side of the Democratic Party, to the left of Andrew Cuomo, and she got, what was it, like 30% in the Democratic primary?
A little more than that, yeah.
33%, I think.
Yeah. So, you know, not enough to be a serious challenger in terms of winning and losing, but enough to embarrass the governor and make a statement that there's a percentage of the public, at least the Democratic public, that thought he was being too conservative on things. How does 2018 shape up in that respect?
Well, I mean, I think we also have to remember that Zephyr Teachout, even though she was a professor, was also a pretty skilled politician once she got on the road and, you know, hitting up 62 counties. So if the Democrats can get themselves together and, I think, find someone who's the left of the governor, who understands the issues and can run to the left of him in a progressive manner, I think that he's really in danger.
He's going to be in some trouble. Now, he has done a variety of things since that. I don't know if we want to call it a scare, but since that embarrassment, as you said, which it was for sure, she started late. Nobody knew who she was. She barely raised any money, and she still got a third of the vote. Now, there were also special circumstances there. The fracking activists were really active then. The teachers' unions were very upset with Cuomo then. He's taken steps to placate a lot of those groups.
Don't forget about his women's party.
Oh, the Women's Equality Party, yeah. He's taken some of those steps. He wound up doing the $15 minimum wage phase-in, paid family leave. He took some steps to placate many on the left. He still has a variety of critics on his left and people lining up to run. I don't know that there's anybody that can overcome his money and his name recognition and his political win-it-all-cost acumen, but there's going to be a challenge from somebody, and it's going to be a very interesting.
And maybe they'll
race.
Make that challenge as a corruption story as well. You
Absolutely.
Know, just because there's some people in Cuomo's inner circle. We know that, you know, Albany has had a long history of just embarrassing and downright unforgivable scandals from the financial and the sexual in nature. And so if someone wants to say, well, you know, this is a management issue, this is you're surrounding yourself with inappropriate individuals, and we want to actually start new, right? Third term may not be the charm. So let's sort of clean house and make sure that we get rid of corruption, starting with you, Cuomo, at the top.
Those trials will be happening. There will be two separate trials related to his inner circle happening in 2018 related to his economic development programs. And we just got news at the end of last week that the FBI is looking into some of the governor's hiring practices. So there's no shortage of potential political headaches for Governor Cuomo, but we also shouldn't underestimate his advantages.
Tell me more about that investigation by the feds for some of the governor's hiring practices.
So the first thing definitely on this is we got to, you know, give credit to the Albany Times-Union, especially reporter Chris Bragg, who's been all over the story and his reporting. It's unclear if his reporting a year ago led to this investigation or not, but he has certainly been on this story. And basically, the question at hand is the governor hiring dozens of executive chamber employees, but having them paid through agencies and authorities that are not the executive chamber.
Ben Max, executive editor of Gotham Gazette, Christina Greer, political science professor at Fordham.